We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
Jed Hoyer.
You know, the next outing for Cishek is a big outing, and the next outing for Brock is a big outing. And so I think that that's kind of how this snowballs, and we sort of have to get out of that and just get back to playing baseball and having fun. And you know, I think that's part of it. You want to show some urgency, and you want to attack the beginning of the season, but we can't ever lose that kind of joy that our team plays with. I mean, I think we need to get back to having fun. And you know, right now, it's not a lot of fun. We need to escape the rut and get back to enjoying ourselves.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport. We're talking Cubs today and trying to figure this all out.
Baseball.
We've never been here before. This is uncharted territory in which this ship is listing, and we're going to try to get it all figured out for you. Eli Hershkovich is going to give us his thoughts, break down the Final Four quickly
Eli's
for
coming.
Us. But 9:45 in studio, midday, midway, 10:20. Tyler Dunn on that amazing behind-the-scenes reporting, extensive reporting on all that has gone wrong with the Green Bay Packers. He'll join us at 10:40. Then Jonah Carey back to baseball at 11. Surprises on the way, too. 312-644-6767 is the phone number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We're streaming at 670thescore.com. Texting, you want to sext, it's Friday. You can do that, too. We don't mind that. 67011. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein_MCK. He's at C1 McKnight. I'm at Dan_Bernstein. Download the radio.com app. Stream the Score on your mobile devices. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Producers Zawoski, Camp, and Diaz. And Brian Gersh, I should mention, also has the video feed. But look, when I say balancing the rational and the irrational, I understand that in these situations, we've never been here before. We've never been here before with this group, and this is an incredibly intelligent and level-headed management group. However, we've never observed the Theo Epstein under this kind of duress. So it's difficult to predict where the line is between rational and big picture and irrational, because they're in the window of their window. They're supposed to be winning 95 games. They're supposed to be competing to win the World Series, and they suck out loud right now.
They do. Every next decision that Joe Madden's able to make in a ball game results in a walk. There are no firemen. There are no relievers coming out of there to help you out. You were in a spot last night where all you could do, you know, what it felt like last night was that the Cubs were going into it against everything. It starts raining. It's gross. You've got, as the game begins, it felt like you're watching this thing with Yu Darvish on the mound going, oh, God, I can already smell the excuse that's going to happen for another Yu Darvish start, that it's rainy and that you can't hold on to the curveball or the slider or the sinker or the whatever. And that then you've got the injury to Javi Baez for a brief moment that made you then there's the Wilson Contreras thing that made you go even
it all sucked
deeper into the depths of darkness. I mean, it was all there for you, and it was all very, very dark. But what this is right now, what it seems to me, is Joe Madden is juggling things. And it's not that he's juggling anything safe. He's juggling like molten rocks. And the decision at this point is he's got to figure out which one of these molten rocks is going to hurt him less while he holds it and juggles the other two so they don't kill him.
They're all killing him, though.
They all are. So when you look at the decision last night to yank Yu Darvish as he's just about to go through the third time through the lineup, as he's right at 72 pitches and probably could go longer, put yourself in Joe's position. What's more important to the Cubs over the next 6 months? What's more important to the Cubs over the next three? what's more important to the Cubs over the next month? Is it making sure that Yu Darvish takes his medicine and tries to figure it out against a lineup that has very clearly locked in on some things? Or is it
You're very close to saying that they had his pitches, but you're not saying it.
But listen, they were on him. I mean, they had found a stroke. They had started to hit him well, and he had started to lose, I think, a little bit more of the zone than he did in the first couple innings. I think he threw a lot better last night than he did against the Rangers. I think he threw a lot better. I think that's something you can build on, even though the end of the game was abject disaster yet again. So you've got this guy who you spent $126 billion on. You've got a team that necessitates having five starters that can get into the sixth on a pretty regular basis in order to get you to the 90 wins or 90-plus wins that you're hoping to get. Is it more important to let you to wear him out and have him go through the rest of that Donaldson and then the rest lineup and have him learn something, have him be a tough guy so that you feel better about watching a bad baseball team right now? Or is it more important to try and rescue him after 72 pretty decent pitches so that you can get him deeper into ballgames later on? If that feels like coddling to you, that's fine. But that's also modern baseball. That's also how you've got to deal with a guy that's shown you the track record that Yu Darvish has while he's been in Chicago. It's just a fact of the matter. You've got options with Carl Edwards Jr. Tyler Chatwood's dead. I mean, Joe knows that when he brings him out of the pen. So the more important thing to Joe, right, as it seems to me, is that you got to rescue everything you can from Yu Darvish because of what you spent on him and what he means to this team. It's not let him run his ass out there and get beat up.
This segment's brought to you by Amco Transmission and Total Car Care. Don't let potholes get you rattled. Amco's free steering and suspension check will find the problem, and their easy payment plans will help get you back on the road fast. Call 1-800-GO-AMCO for the location nearest you. Yeah, this is, we're kind of through the looking glass on this right now. That's where we are, because we don't know in these private conversations, and everybody's kind of on lockdown right now. People are walking on eggshells around there because it's not supposed to feel like this. And this is one of these times where rational people act irrationally, and it's all in the context of how the offseason was handled, the urgency and the pressure on Joe Maddon. Because this is I've had a lot of people ask, well, does this mean they're going to fire Maddon? They're going to fire Maddon. How weaselly would it be? I don't think that Theo and Jed, I think Theo and Jed are straight shooters, and they generally don't act out of the kind of weaselly passive aggressiveness. If you fired Joe Maddon today because of a bullpen that can't see straight, that would come off as cheap and a little dirty to me, because this is not Joe Madden's fault.
No, it's not. It's truly, truly not.
You can blame him for a lot of stuff. There's plenty of gripes and quibbles you can have with what he does. But you told him, you set up an entire offseason antithetical to his approach. An entire offseason that goes against the way he preaches everything. And then to get in the season and say that all of a sudden, all of these reliable pitchers, nobody on the team can throw a strike. If you were to cashier him now, that would leave a real sour taste. If you were going to do it, just do it before the season. Say, look, it's
just take care of it.
It's enough already. It's sort of like the Quenneville thing.
We got to move on.
It's like the Quenneville thing. Don't set him up to fail passive aggressively. You want a veteran winger? Here's a 72-year-old Chris Kunitz. Oh, you want a stay at home defenseman? Here's Brandon Manning, who's now a healthy scratch in the minors. Like, okay, here you go, and do this, and then when you really think that had they done it earlier, had they done it more cleanly and more openly, it would have shocked some people, but it still might have been the right move. It would come off as sour to me if now for this reason you were to pin it on the manager.
Yeah, the decisions he's got to make aren't fun ones. And in a lot of ways, you know, we saw last year up until Pedro Strop got left in to hit for himself, that was one of Joe's better managing years. That the decisions he made, the buttons he pressed, the way that the Cubs as a front office also were able to supplement a bullpen with the AAA bus going back and forth. People, I think, forget just how bad the rotation was in the first half of 2018. It was horrendous. And that bullpen saved them from more than I think people remember. And the collapse down the stretch was different, and probably because you had to go to those guys so often. Joe's decisions right now are just trying to mitigate disaster. the Cubs have been off to probably the worst start you could imagine. And right now, you know, a couple of days ago, it felt like you just flipped the switch and go back to being the Cubs. Now I think you've got to, as a baseball team, realize that to crawl out of this thing, it's got to be a step at a time. And that's what I think Joe was trying to do last night.
We've actually, we played well in Texas. We hit the ball well, kind of like you saw at the end of the game today. But no question, we have to play a more complete game of baseball. And we will. But it's primarily, we got to get the bullpen defined.
I can define it. Bad. I've just defined your bullpen.
So far.
Your bullpen is bad.
So far, not so great. Look at the choices that Joe Maddon had available to him. Brandon Kinsler had worked three of the last four going into last night's game. Stamen Steve Cishek, who was just atrocious on Wednesday. Pedro Strop, his last pitch on Saturday, so his not being around and available is...
Yeah, his last pitch was bounced at the feet of the catcher.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. Brad Brock could have pitched, but then that would have been three straight for him. And had you thrown throwing Mike Montgomery, rather, made that three of four for him. So when we find out that Jose Quintana is going to make the start against the Brewers, and that's going to be the rotation they've set up, that is the safest decision that they've been able to make in a week. Moving Jose Quintana to start this game and making sure he's there and set and ready to go.
Flying
against
him out
the Brewers.
Get a good night's sleep.
Please be okay. That's the safest, most comfortable decision that they've, other than like penciling in, you know, names in a lineup, which should have been, you know, kind of expected. I expected, I think a lot of people did, this offense to bounce back and be kind of a torturous one to have to get through. But sending Jose Quintana to go start against the Brewers today, that's the most comfortable thing they've done in a while.
How close are we to this being a genuine crisis? That's what I'm trying to figure out, is what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with just a little stumble in the start of a season, because the way people are acting, the way people are talking about it, the stuff John Lester says, when we talk to Jed, to hear Joe Maddon, we're on the precipice of something really bad.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind.
It's a big story.
Yes, there's no doubt in my mind, though, that it is a bigger story now because it's the beginning of the season. I think it is true that had this happened while you're 25-15 and you drop five in a row, that it feels differently. Alarming, sure, but differently. If it happens while you're at 500, it's very alarming, but different than it is to start the season because of the narrative that they'd put around themselves breaking camp and going up to go play big league ball with Texas. Like that's just a fact of the matter. But it's happening. I mean, you can't separate that from the issues at hand. That's part of it. Being 1-5 is part of why this thing feels so tightly gripped right now.
Garrett in Lafayette is on the score. Hi, Garrett.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was just going to say, when you look at the contracts and what's expiring at the end of next year, you can realize that this is basically just an eat-it year with the bullpen. They've already come out and said, this is our team. We may have some reinforcements in AAA, but even with a little bit of shuffling there, next year the only person they have that is actually under contract, unless an option or arbitration eligible, is just Chatwood. So they can completely revamp whatever they need to, and that's probably where the panic is, because they have nowhere to go. This is it. This is all they have, and it's not producing, and they have no answers, because it isn't reasonable for answers yet based upon the budget that they've been given from Ricketts. And going forward next year, they have a lot of money coming off the books, and they can redo things. And I'm of the proponent, yes, their window of opportunity is open now, absolutely. However, it'll be open next year too. And if it means sacrificing too much this year, luxury tax on and on, where you can't compete in future years, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You have to ride it out.
Yeah, I mean, Garrett, I think they've told you that, too. We had Jed Hoyer on yesterday, and he mentioned that the answers are going to come from within. I don't, you know, you could be angry and sign Craig Kimbrell and make something feel better, but Craig Kimbrell can't pitch the 6th and the 7th and the 8th and the 9th. Like, it doesn't fix all of your problems. You still have to go to the rest of this bullpen, which, with the exception of Brandon Kinsler, has been very bad.
That's a pretty sensible call, though, trying to look at it in the larger relationship to sort of where they are. That do you have to eat a year? I mean, we're not there yet, but are they thinking about, look, even though we're here, we're not going to spend on maybe a declining arm in Craig Kimbrell and offer him too much money on the back end, et cetera. But these are really difficult and serious decisions that they've got to make.
You know what I thought was somewhat amusing last night? The Iowa Cubs played their first game. I didn't even look at the result. They won. They beat Nashville 5-4. Hip, hip, hooray. Did you notice, though, I was looking through the pitchers that threw, Alan Webster, Dylan Maples, and Dakota Meeks all through for the Iowa Cubs last night. Every single one of the guys. Remember, we talked with Sahadev, I think, after the second game. Or maybe it was Monday. It was Monday. Monday conversation with Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. And he mentioned that it's quite possible that there's a better bullpen for the Cubs if a couple of these guys, Webster, Maples, Meeks, if they throw well in Iowa, they could be, they've got the kind of talent to be higher-ish leverage guys, 7th and 8th inning guys, 6th and 7th inning guys, hell, guys who aren't walking 15 per 9.
The throw strikes.
So all three of those guys pitched. I wouldn't be surprised if that's something they add on. Those appearances are something more regular over the next week.
John in Springfield, you're on the Score. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. When it comes to the bullpen, how do we identify if it's mechanics versus mental, psychological?
They're the same thing.
Sometimes.
Because I can't figure out what's going wrong with the bullpen, how much of it is in their head, or if it's just bad pitching.
That's the same thing, though. That's what pitching is. Pitching is where one meets the other.
Yeah, but at what point are we there at the intersection? I mean,
every pitch that everybody throws is at that intersection. That's pitching, and that's the job at the highest levels is to make sure that the mind matches up with the body.
So then the coaching is pressing the pitching too hard, or he's got too much weight to where it's psychological, and they're just thinking too much versus just going out there and just throwing.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think necessarily the coaches are telling him anything.
There's something a little bit bizarre to me. I get that that everybody watching this team, Cubs fan or not, well, with the exception of some Sox fans, and I don't blame you for that, wants to put blame somewhere. I get that. It is very often, though, the pursuit that you're trying to find blame that lies with either Theo or Jed or the Ricketts or coaches or Joe or the decisions that Joe makes, whatever. These are major league pitchers. Name for me the rookies fresh out of AAA in this bullpen right now that just have their eyes wide like dinner plates and have never thrown strikes before in the big leagues. Name those guys. Anybody? These are all veteran dudes. These are all major league pitchers who should be expected to not walk 9 per 9. There's blame that exists there. They've gone through struggles before. Steve Cishek has gotten wild before. Brad Brock has gotten wild before. Tyler Chatwood spent an entire year being wild. You have to at some point, As a baseball player, like, look at yourself and find the help you need. Like, they're professionals who are paid to do this job.
In Tuscaloosa, it's Pat on the Score.
Hey, fellas. So given the performance of the Cubs' so-called Major League bullpen and Jose Abreu and Yoan Moncada's knack for punishing struggling pitching, along with Yonder Alonso taking basically all the walks this year, do you believe the Cubs could win a series against the White Sox if they played this weekend? Roll damn tide, baby.
Of course they could.
I forgot it was my screen's blocked, so all I could see was Pat, and I didn't see Tuscaloosa. Yeah. That's great. Forgot it was Roll Damn Tide at the end. Yeah, probably.
Of course they could.
Either team could beat the other one. Both have the Nationals have the worst bullpen in Major League Baseball, per the numbers so far this year. The Cubs are the second worst, and the White Sox are the third worst when it comes to free passes, when it comes to walks. Those are the three worst bullpens in baseball right now.
When we come back, we're going to get you everything you need to know about the two basketball games tomorrow. They're both tomorrow, right?
Yes, we've
got
Saturday
we've got
and
an afternoon and, mm-hmm. and an evening, and then it's going to be the Monday final. So Eli Hershkovich, who has forgotten more about college basketball than you will ever know, he is going to tell us what is important and get you all coached up. That's coming up. So keep it here. Bernstein and McKnight, you have the Score. The Circle of Life brings us round to basketball talk with Eli Hershkovich on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You can find him on Twitter at Eli Hershkovich. writes for 670thescore.com and works also for the Action Network. And he gave you the Auburn Tigers.
That he did. From the get-go and strong. Congratulations.
We got two games tomorrow. And how are you looking at them, Eli?
So with Virginia, Auburn, the key for the Tigers to continue on this run, winners of 12 straight outright, is to control the pace. Virginia averages the lowest amount of possessions per game at just under 60 a game. They want to slow this thing down. I was surprised how they were able to play at an up-tempo style in that second half against Purdue. Kyle Guy hitting a ton of threes when Carson Edwards was coming back and forth. But Auburn wants to control the pace, push the tempo in this one. They average a little bit over 66 possessions per game. So for Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, they got to gain rebound. They got to control the glass and keep allow them to play in that transition style. And they did it against Kentucky, right? Without Okiki Chumokiki, who tore his ACL against UNC, they were able to hang around on the glass, only trailed Kentucky by four in the rebounding department, and they pushed the tempo, and Jared Harper got a ton of threes in the second half, also got to the rim in overtime, blew by Ashton Hagans a bunch. So you have Ty Jerome, you have Kyle Guy, two really good guards for Virginia, but their offense looks sporadic when they are sped up, and I expect Auburn to speed them up in this matchup.
Let me ask you this. Let's say Virginia makes it more about half-court possessions. How can Bruce Pearl open up the angles of his offense to allow the speed advantage to work? Forget end-to-end. I'm saying once. Let's say you've got a guard, it's a standing dribble, and Virginia's going to pack the paint. They're going to play their defense. What is the counter move to use speed advantageously in the half court in this case?
Well, I think Auburn's guards are quicker off the dribble in terms of Jared Harper and Bryce Brown. So Bryce Harper did it a ton against Kentucky, and granted, Kentucky's guards are a little younger, a little more inexperienced than Virginia's, but he got to his spot in the half court. He didn't miss a shot in the second half. So, and from the elbow out, Jared Harper was able to blow by again Ashton Hagans, and Kie Clark, for me, is the key for Auburn having success offensively. The Virginia freshman guard, Tony Bennett did not shy away from playing him for a ton of minutes in that second half against Purdue. He hasn't shied away from playing him a bunch in second half of games in the NCAA tournament, which is surprising because he owns the highest turnover rate on that team. But defensively, just under 20% turnover rate. But defensively for Virginia, Jared Harper should be able to expose Kie Clark in the half court off the dribble, get to the basket, Bryce Brown. And for them to space the floor is also important. Without Chumokiki, you're talking about one true big on the floor at one time, likely Austin Wiley getting a load of the minutes if he's able to stay out of foul trouble. You have Daniel Purifoy, you have McLemore as well that could space the floor and protect the basket as a center, like five spot, four spot, undersized five, whatever you want to call these Auburn bigs. But they have the lineup to be able to space Virginia out because of their quick guard play and a four out, one in type of lineup.
So outside of the big point forward, big number zero, Mayo Baxter-Bell for Liberty, I fell in love with two different players, Jarrett Culver and with Cassius Winston. They go against each other, Texas Tech and Michigan State. I've really enjoyed watching Cassius Winston play through the Big Ten tournament, and in this one, Texas Tech and Michigan State should be a hell of a ballgame, though.
Yeah, Cassius Winston is probably my favorite player in college basketball. We saw what he did, just the down screen to set up Kenny Goins for that three against Duke, because Kenny Goins got blocked by Zion Williamson earlier in that half, literally on the same type of shot. Williamson came on and blocked the shot. But on that three, Winston sets the down screen. Trey Jones trails him, so you get Kenny Goins wide open, and Williamson can't come out because Winston screened him off. So Cassius Winston not only is an elite scorer from that point guard position, but an elite playmaker in all senses, the second highest assist rate in college basketball. But Texas Tech's ball screen defense is one of the best in the country, too. They allow a really low two-point scoring rate. I believe it's bottom 50 in the country. So Michigan State won't be able to do the pick and roll as they want to and as they've done for much of this NCAA tournament. That's what their offense is predicated upon, is the pick and roll. Now, Jarrett Culver is also a key to this game, plays 44% of the time at the four spot, also owns the most defensive win shares in college basketball. So your love for Jarrett Culver is very justified.
Thank you.
A really good defensive three and a four at times for Texas Tech. But for Michigan State, they have the advantage on the glass, the 21st highest offensive rebounding rate in the country. And with Culver at the four, I think they'll be able to expose Texas Tech down low, get all over the glass with Xavier Tillman, and Nick Ward, and even Kenny Goins to a point. And Texas Tech also struggles staying out of foul trouble and keeping teams off the line, which is what Michigan State thrived off of in Big Ten play.
So you like Auburn and Michigan State?
Correct.
Okay, and who wins the final?
I got Auburn.
Okay.
And I'm surprised
sticking
to say that.
Sticking with it.
I'm sticking with the Tigers. You think about what Michigan State would have to deal with on a two-day prep stretch for Auburn. Because of their opponent's turnover rate, the highest opponent's turnover rate in college basketball, Texas Tech turns you over a ton. But Auburn's defensive style with their ball pressure and with their quick twitch in transition is going to be tough to match up against on a two-day stretch. The guard play in that matchup would be fantastic between Cassius Winston and Jared Harper, but I think Auburn's three-point shooting will be the difference maker, and again, their ability to turn Michigan State over in that matchup as well.
So, there it is.
Auburn wins a title, and then Bruce Pearl leaves for where? Sinks his program and moves on
wherever he wants.
Yeah, I think the NCAA is going to come down hard on him at some point, but he'll have glory for a couple minutes.
Of course he will. It's how it works.
Eli, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
This is his time of year. Eli Hershkovich, a man beautiful with a star stuff on the rise. We'll get back to Cubs talk just after the top of the hour. You saw something last night.
I did. I saw something last night. I think Joe put something in front of Cubs fans, in front of Cubs observers, and perhaps in front of those who make decisions about his rosters and lineups as well. The White Sox lineup is out, too, for their home opener against the Mariners. We'll get to all that next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.